Hello to all H.I. McDonough, Castor Troy, Sailor Ripley, and Red Miller lookalikes. You're listening to the Dare Daniel podcast. I'm Corky McDonough, local comedian, and as I've stated before, and I will continue to state, I love cookie. With me, as always, is my co-host, film critic Daniel Barnes.
An indelible moment from this season. You called it back, and that's what we're going to be doing this entire episode. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the finale of Dare Daniel : Cage Match. This isn't even the finale. This is the Andy Cohen wrap up. We're on the couch. We're getting catty.
Sure.
We're dishing on the season. I might reach out and slap you. That's not possible because we're doing this over.
I am in a ball gown.
You look amazing.
Thank
you. Look amazing.
You.
I want to throw wine on you. Right. Just splash it right on you. Welcome. Over the course of this season, of course, we've explored the cinema of the great Nicolas Cage, all for your sick and twisted amusement. We've reviewed over the course of this season 7 movies starring or co-starring Nicolas Cage. Corky, it's a group of movies that I believe will inevitably come to be known as the Cageneficent 7. I think that's just history happening before your ears right there, but
yeah, or the magnificent. I'll leave it to the writer.
The Cage Nickifant. Cage Nickifant.
Yeah,
it's good stuff.
Yeah, it's great stuff. And after these 7 episodes, even though they are full of Cageneficence, I still don't got it. Even though they're full of that, we're ready to tap out on this season and give the W to Cage.
Yeah,
but never fear, Dare Daniel will return with a new season and an all-new slate of episodes in January.
We'll talk more about that upcoming season of Dare Daniel in 2024, and we'll reveal the theme of the season a little bit later. We'll also introduce a brand new Daniel and Corky podcast concept that premieres in just 2 weeks.
But first, the reason we got studded up in ball gowns, the reason we invited Andy Cohen to sit down. Has Andy returned the call yet? Is he showing up?
Not yet.
Okay.
Well, I'm holding out hope.
Yeah, seats open, Andy. We are going to recap our Cage Match season. We'll briefly revisit all 7 of these movies, and we'll pick our favorite and least favorite Cage performances, freakouts, and movies themselves.
Yeah, we want to answer all of the unanswered questions from this season, really tie a bow around it. And for this last episode, we wanted to kind of hand out an awards, right? This is like the end of the festival awards here. You know, at any film festival, at the end of it, they pick the awards, the audience comes in. So we each picked our favorite film from the festival, our least favorite film, our favorite Nicolas Cage performance, maybe from the same film, maybe not, our least favorite Cage performance, and our favorite Cage freakout. Because what is a Cage movie without a Cage freakout? That's what you kind of think of, I think, first when you think of Cage, is him just going nuts, you know, oh my God, the fucking bees.
Yeah.
Okay.
Raising Arizona
and Mandy on the toilet. I mean, so many freakouts you can pick from. And we had certainly a few in this festival. Corky, your pick for favorite freakout, it comes from round 2.
Yes.
Nicolas Cage's only directorial effort to date, a little movie called Sonny. And your pick for favorite freakout involves Cage himself. Talk about it.
And my favorite Cage freakout this season was Sonny. It's a character of Acid Yellow in Sonny because it's got everything I want from a proper Cage freakout. Plus, bang for your buck, this might be the most Cage freakout you get of any of his movies. And I'm including Deadfall in that. Bang for your buck wise. Screen time to freak out, because it's all that, baby. It's it.
Acid Yellow is a walking freak out to the extent that he can walk. You know, he's certainly coked to the gills. So he believes that he can, at least.
Cage is wearing a prosthetic nose. He has, another thing I think can be its own Cage category is Cage wigs.
Mm-hmm.
He's got Gene Wilder curly afro wig happening. He's dressed in a yellow tuxedo like you would see the Fly Blue Rental. He's got this insane voice happening. He rambles on about his love for coquette, which apparently means cocaine. He's directing himself, so he's doing it through a fisheye lens.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking straight to camera, no more than 3 inches from camera.
Fisheye and blurry slash lurching, because yes. This is where we're doing like POV of people who are very drunk or coked out.
He's unintelligible. Mm-hmm. He is shouting. And then he gets physical and plays off a very large man next to him, even greater. So it's got everything I want from a Cage freakout, all in one, like hyped up. And I maybe we can transition into this. It also came in my worst movie of these seven.
Yeah.
So it was the only part of that movie that I felt anything for.
Yeah, I see what you're talking about as a freak out per minute. Of screen time, right? Or freak out per shot. He's freaking out in every second of screen time, but he's only on there for like 3 minutes.
No,
but unfortunately, the entire rest of the movie is just, oh my God.
He is you picked pure it for uncut overall. Coquette. He is pure he is uncut just, Panamanian coquette.
That is
coquette.
Like a bump of coquette right at the end of this absolutely just dead, lifeless, absolutely awful movie.
Yeah. Yeah,
and you picked it for your worst overall film in the festival, and there was competition, stiff competition.
And it was one we talked about that we were cracking up because of Brenda Bleden's performance, about the misuse of Harry Dean Stanton. There's just so much wrong in this movie that it's funny to talk about, but not enjoyable to sit through at all.
Certainly is not. Yeah, and this was in the running for me. I didn't pick this for worst overall, but very much in the running. The Brenda Blethyn line. Here's the unanswered, I think, question, or a little bow that we can tie around, which is the Brenda Blethyn line from the restaurant scene.
Yeah.
I could not get it out. You had some trouble getting it out, the exact line here. All right, so the line that is delivered by Brenda Blethyn, playing Jewel, of course, the blousy madam / mother to the
this
title character.
BAFTA and Cannes award winning. Secrets and Lies swept BAFTA, Cannes, Golden Globe Awards, Los Angeles Film Critics. This is a seemingly talented woman.
It's unbelievable. I always take my shoes off when I'm eating. I've done that since I was a little girl. That's it. Like, and the amazing thing is, like, again, like, as you alluded during our review, she just, like, the waiter comes up and is like, you got to keep your shoes on, lady. She's just eating without her shoes like an animal. He's like, hey, you got to keep your shoes on. She turns to him and is a child.
Like, yes.
She regresses a la Altered States. Like, she comes out of the machine and is just like, she's at a different level of evolutionary development than the rest of us.
It's like one of those Animorphs book covers, except she doesn't shrink to an animal. She shrinks down to a little foghorn leghorn with a child's voice. I was just a little girl.
Oh my God. Sunny. I don't think I'll ever forget it. Mm-mm. Some of these movies, I had to remember they existed as we were coming up on the recap, and I only watched them maybe a month or two ago. But Sunny, I don't think I'll ever forget, for better or for worse, almost entirely for worse. So, Corky, my favorite freakout, and also my favorite Cage performance of all the seven movies we watched in this festival, came in our round one review of mm-hmm. Vampire's Kiss. This movie, this is the golden corral of freakouts. This is an absolute smorgasbord buffet of freakouts. You can go freak out at the salad bar. You could be freaking out at the make your own omelet station. You could just be like freaking the fuck out on the guy in the tall white hat at the prime rib carving stand. Just like freaking out on him, like big time. So many choices. And Corky, on Tuesdays and Thursdays, lobster freakouts. Yeah, no, that's why you want to go down there. And that's partly why it's my favorite performance. But I also think that, like, in the film, I think he hits a lot of these very amazingly diverse, but always extreme. It's always some sort of an extreme, but it's not the same extreme. It's not just hitting that same note. He's hitting every shade or mood of extreme. He's painting with fire, with poison, with whatever. It's dangerous, and I thought it was fantastic. Now, as far as my favorite freakout, I mean, there's just Alma freakouts alone. Uh-huh. His secretary, Alma. Boy, there's just so much to choose from. I'm going to have to go with the phone call scene. This is where this scene like turns back and forth like several times. There's a file. There's a missing file. And Cage is like insisting this is the most important file that's ever happened. And he is nonstop humiliating this woman. He gets the guy on the phone thinking he is going to really like shove it in this woman's face. He's going to do it on the phone right in front of her. The guy on the other end is like, hey, bud, that's cool. Whenever you like, no hurry.
Could not give a shit less.
Does not give a shit. Do you think that changes anything? Absolutely not. The freak out just intensifies, culminating in like a Elvis point that just comes out of nowhere and is just beautiful, like grace note of the scene. It's outstanding. It's really outstanding. And, you know, even if the movie has its debits, I think Cage is just, he's lightning bursting out of a bottle here.
Yeah, I echo a lot of your sentiments there. It was tough for me not to go with some of these freakouts because, as my favorite, because they're gift worthy. I mean, the gifs you've seen of Nicolas Cage are probably 50% from this movie. The wide eyes, the pointing, all that kind of stuff. It is, however, my favorite performance of the ones we reviewed. I think he's actually very, very good in this movie. And I think the movie's quite good, actually, and had me thinking for a while. And like you said, he varies his freakouts. I would even consider the end deterioration that he goes through to be kind of a freakout.
It's absolutely
just a subdued on a different level freakout.
It's like a freak
He's walking around New York, and these are not actors reacting to him, and he's asking people to stab him through the heart with a stake. Do you know how fucking crazy you have to be to freak out New Yorkers? Like, that's the fourth person that's asked them to murder him that day. And he like freaks these people out. I love the scene of him descending into the very packed Manhattan, you know, nightclub where he's just got the hunched shoulders and he's in the late 80s goth underground trance nightclub and he's the weirdest fucking guy there. This is the scene that birthed that killer party guy, whatever his name is. He was the weirdest guy in there.
Yes, Party Monster.
Yes, Party Monster guy, yeah.
Party Monster's looking at this guy like, whoa.
Yeah, dude, like, get him the fuck out of here.
Tone it down.
He's scaring people.
Like, I do not feel comfortable about this man.
So, yeah, that was so true. And we watch him deteriorate, and he's good in it. And he does a lot of innovative kind of stuff that maybe he tried to ape throughout his career. But you're right, I don't think he varied the pitch of that much after that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an astounding performance. Something to be seen for sure.
Definitely.
Love it or hate it. Love it or hate it. Only one thing to correct here that I could think of, which was that in the scene where he puts the gun in his mouth and shoots a blank in his mouth, which I think we agree is maybe a much more insane thing to do than to put a live cockroach in your mouth,
yeah,
which is to put a live gun in your mouth. You mentioned the Voyagers actor who in the 1980s accidentally killed himself on set playing with a prop gun. You said it was John Michael Hexum. It's John Eric Hexum. Putting a bow on that one. R.I.P. John Eric Hexum.
Yeah.
Don't play with guns, fake or real.
No.
Corky, we just talked about some of our favorite freakouts. We talked about our favorite performance, but they cannot all be winners, tires, respectable losers, or even lovable misfits. Several of the films in this festival, we agree, are outright awful, Sonny included. I think we're very much on the same page there. And this is another one of them. A Captain the Kaleli and the Mandolin. Oh, boy. This is your pick for worst Nicolas Cage performance in this festival. Talk about why did this scrape the bottom of the barrel?
Yeah, and it had some company with Jiu Jitsu and Left Behind and Trespass. But in those movies, he's pretty boring. But that's the purpose, I think. He's trying to be subdued. Jiu Jitsu, not so much. It's just fucking weird and bad. but there, I don't think there was anything you could do with that. Captain Crowley's mandolin was meant to be an Oscar winner, or at least an Oscar nominee. It was meant to be the big showcase. And he as the lead, as the romantic lead, had to be charismatic, had to be desirable, had to be something captivating. And you don't get any of that. He doesn't meet the mark on any of that. He's just annoying, really. And it's not annoying in the kind of Cage way that it's kind of enjoyable and fun to go through seven episodes of. It's just, you're not the right fit for this, and what you're doing isn't working. There's money behind this. There's big set pieces. He was set up to look good and fails on this. So that is why it's my worst performance, because he made it very hard to sit through.
Yeah, he's a big gaping hole in this movie, because like you say, he not only needs to be, you know, charismatic and lovable and desirable, he needs to be more desirable than American Psycho era Christian Bale, which is who gets thrown over for this, like, for this interloper, this outsider, this foreigner, this foreign invader.
Right. The Greek, so Christian Bale, the very,
it's
Greek.
It's a big thing in the movie. So it can't just be because he's so fucking hot, right? That can't be it. That's just objectively, that's just wrong. Okay. I don't care. So it has to be something in his personality, in who he is, in his worldview. And he just seems ordinary. He seems very ordinary, except that he likes opera. That's it. Yeah. And he plays the mandolin. That's not enough.
Right. And he's part of the Axis of Evil, or he's part of the Axis powers in World War II. But he's just a fun loving guy.
Oh, he's fun. He loves Puccini. To have
the beach, la la la. Yeah. And again, also, he's Italian in this movie, like proper from Italy Italian.
So, yeah.
Not working.
Everything's all wrong with his performance and with the movie. It's just, again, this is one that is not my least favorite, maybe not even bottom three, but probably the one I had to be like, what the fuck happened in this movie?
Yeah.
Like, he was a soldier and he had a mandolin. And then Bale was a commie. I don't know what
the, and it's long.
It is quite long, with no real narrative momentum to it either, because the movie just feels kind of gutted. And I did read like a synopsis of the book, and it's certainly much different, especially in the second half, third act, and especially in the Bale character. Didn't make it in the movie though. All right, my pick for worst performance. I'm going a little different direction here. Captain Corelli is kind of, he's the love of life. He's the love of life and love of pizza and love of mandolin and love of Puccini. Left behind, his performance has no love of life, no life at all. It's his work in Left Behind. He's the star of the film, but arguably not the star of the film. God, this was just a big fat nothing for me. To me, that's just so much worse than Cage being annoying.
Sure.
Is Cage being nothing. Like, there's nothing here. This is an absolute dead-eyed, make it through the day, don't do anything more than you have to, say the words you need to say, take your check, moving on.
90% of my scenes are me sitting down, in a cockpit or an airport dining room.
I do not want to interact with people. Like, yeah, it is it's a big nothing of her performance. And I don't know, this is maybe the big disappointment for Left Behind for me, which was that, like, in the book, and there's a moment or two in here, some of the stuff that's happening on the ground during the rapture, it just seems really pulpy and ridiculous. Kind of made for Cage. Cage really should have played the Antichrist figure in this one. If they had adapted it more closely to the books, he could have played the Antichrist figure and done pretty darn well. Yeah, Adrian Draconia, or whatever the fuck we said his name was. I can't remember.
He's getting outworked by Chad Michael Murray in this
one. It's bad. It's bad. It's real bad. And it's just all the missed opportunities of this to even be weird. Like, it's not weird. It's not really like a proselytizer even. It's just like,
no, it's pretty tame for one of those Christian movies,
but it's also not like here's, we have a big heart, you know, and all are welcome or anything like that. It's just, it's very heartless at the same time and very, just very basic. And sure hated the movie, but I really, really did not like Nicolas Cage's performance. The big unanswered question here, Corky, we debated this during the show. I said I would go back and watch it. I did. The plane, remember? There's two planes. There's a plane coming at him in the sky. Nicolas Cage, for some reason, even though he knows that people have disappeared from the fucking planet, is like, I'm going to just go straight on to this guy's until the last second when I'm like, oh my God. Right? Like, you got the whole sky. Here's your whole sky. We're just in flyover country. There's no big mountains coming out of anywhere. We're in flyover country.
You can bank left. You can bank right. Left, you can bank right, up. You can bank down.
Down, diagonal. Use your heart. You
put it in reverse.
Go with it. Have fun with it. But no, instead he waits till the last second. They clip wings.
Yeah.
Their plane ends up fine, although they do have to make an emergency landing. The other plane, which has no pilots in the cockpit, which we see, goes down. The question was, do we see other people on the plane? They ask afterward, were people on the plane? I know, I don't know. I didn't see. That's what they say in the film. You insisted, yes, you do. I said, no, you don't. I went back, Quirky. I analyzed this thing frame by frame like it was the Zapruder film. I really got into it. And I can say confidently, I have no clue. No clue. Like, there's one shot. There's one shot of people looking out a window, but like screen direction, sight lines, and the bemused faces of the people give you no indication. You would think if it was a shot of the other plane, people would be like, oh my God, like we're about to fucking crash with this plane, because they don't have a pilot on board unless no one else except the pilots got raptured.
Yeah.
Seems unlikely. It just, it doesn't make any sense. It's just so poorly. I mean, you can go back and watch it, but it just, there's one shot where you see it, and I really have no idea. If you feel strongly about it, I'll go with you. If not, you know what? Who cares?
Yeah, you know, I was ready for you to tell me that I was wrong, and I was going to insist that much like the Zapruder film, what you saw was a heavily edited government version that fits their narrative of what happened. No. But, yeah, I don't doubt you in the slightest that it's indecipherable. Is that the faces of the people on our plane? Or is that the faces of the people on the doomed plane? Who knows?
Also, like, the way, like, the direction they're looking, but the camera is, like, moving in an opposite direction, and then you're, like, looking at their sight lines, and you're like, could that be someone from that side of the plane looking? Does that work with how the... That was, I don't know. I think if there's any evidence that they didn't,
but then you
that
wonder,
might be it. But then
why
it
would they do
sense.
A shot from the doomed plane if nobody's, you know, what was, right. There was no other shots from the doomed plane.
We saw the cockpit. Yeah. I don't know. It's just so poorly made. I don't think we can ever really know. I think we'd have to get the filmmakers and actually contact them. Maybe that's the next step here, is just to directly reach out and be like, hey, buddy, what the
one
hell?
One small question about one small aspect of this big film.
That's all I got to know. Never bother you again. Seriously.
Sorry for the call at 3 a.m.
Seriously. I also had thought, I don't remember if I mentioned it during the show, but I thought we had maybe been dared to watch Left Behind at some point. So I
think we
through.
Have.
I looked through our old dares. We were dared to watch two different versions that aren't this version on two different occasions by two different people.
How many times
people.
Are they making this fucking thing?
Right? So one of them was the Kirk Cameron films, and then one was one with Tom Everett Scott from American Werewolf in Paris fame, taking it all the way back, Dare Daniel style. And one of the dares was actually a wormhole dare from Mrs. Buck Williams. So intrigue.
Wait, Mrs. Buck Williams.
Mrs. Buck Williams, who is not in this movie, and he's not married. I don't know what to say. Just okay. A big Buck Williams fan.
Yeah.
You know, like people are like Mrs. Josh Groban or something. Yeah, it's just like, man.
Or Miss Chad Michael Murray.
I'm Mrs. Chad Michael Murray Buck Williams / Buck. Corky, my pick for worst film, and I'm pretty sure you also had this in the running for worst film, worst performance, worst everything. It's a little movie called Jiu-Jitsu.
Yeah.
My God, was this a forgettable movie? It was fun to listen to the episode because I was like, oh yeah, this is a movie that I watched.
Yeah.
Like that's how much that you know, took up residence in my brain.
It's definitely like the least of these movies, and it's like the most incompetent. There's just parts of this left out, like that won't, or that contradicts itself because it's a different movie every scene.
Yeah, it's ineptly made and very indifferently executed, I would say.
But it was a passion project for Nick Cage, who really wanted to discover that alien. Like, he probably thought it was a real story.
His next quest, find the alien and to take him down. It's just awful. I don't even know what to say. Like, really, it's just, yeah, like, again, if we're going to like least performance is Nick Cage and Left Behind, this is least movie. It's just terrible and such small portions. I mean, God. The unanswered question, I think, from this is, as you said, how does this movie cost $25 million when it looks and sounds like this? And for the answer to that question, let's ask Dog Eat Dog director Paul Schrader, who said in an interview with Andrew Anthony of The Guardian, quote, "The good thing about working with Nick is that he gets your film financed. The bad thing is that he eats your budget alive." So I think to a certain extent that explains like the shoddiness of Jiu-Jitsu, but also of Left Behind, of Trespass, even certain elements of Dog Eat Dog, I think, is just like, yeah, Nick Cage is going to be your guy. He's going to get the movie made. But then what does that leave for other actors? So now you're talking about like, well, we can't have this scene. And we have to cut the extras in half. And locations, we can't shoot at that location, you know. There was a whole thing going on, apparently, with Dog Eat Dog, where they couldn't get Willem Dafoe on because Nicolas Cage was just making so much more. And so they ended up with a deal where it was like Nicolas Cage gave $100,000 of his salary, not just adding on to Willem, but here's 100 of mine. I'll go down 100 just so you can have another 100. So Cage is really cashing in on these like kind of smaller movies, straight to video movies, fringe sort of A-list, non-A-list type movies. So Quirky Dog Eat Dog, speaking of.
Yeah.
This is my pick for best film of the festival, and it's definitely our biggest disagreement that we had this season. We were pretty far apart on this one. Schrader himself, I think, to a certain extent, in the same interview with The Guardian, he kind of takes your stance a little bit. He says, "I've been fortunate over my career to be involved in some important and prestigious films. Dog Eat Dog is not one of them." So he's certainly aware, again, that he's not making First Reformed or Mishima or Blue Collar or any of the other masterpieces necessarily that he's made in his career. However, I thought it was a damn good movie. I thought it was absolutely entertaining. But I should correct myself, because in our argument, I said it didn't track that Schrader would make a shitty version of a attempt to rip off a thing. It does track in a sense, so I'll correct myself. He's made bad films. He's not immortal. He's made movies just for money, and he's made movies that were his passion projects that rubbed me the wrong way, the way this movie did you. He's on the edge. He's always on the edge, which is a dangerous place to be in a lot of ways. But one way is in terms of quality and consistency. You know, if you're putting it out there and being dangerous. I love what he does here. I think he made the movie he wanted to make, and I think people who like these kind of scuzzy crime films and this sort of new Hollywood aesthetic that he's pushing are going to dig it, but at the same time, I do respect your opinion on this movie. Do you have any thoughts on Dog Eat Dog?
I would correct what I said about how bored I was, because there are moments of tense suspense and acting and momentum that you never get in Sonny, that you never get in Jiu-Jitsu, even though Jiu-Jitsu is ostensibly an all-action movie. It's the fucking terrible action, so it's just boring. It's repetitive. Mm-hmm. But when I was bored in Dog Eat Dog, I was very bored. But there are moments that lifted me out of that. And I did think it built towards the end. Like, to me, it got better towards the end, which I really dig when a movie does that. So I would say that I may have oversold my boredom with it. I just didn't have much positive to say about it.
Fair enough. See, look at that. Common ground, coming together, building bridges, healing.
Like two pilotless ships in the night. We come right at each other.
But just clip wings.
Clip wings enough to kill one of us.
One of us falls to our death. Which one? We'll
see. And then the other one goes to hell.
The other thing I guess I would clear up from that episode is that, you know, I made a little joke about how I was a McCarthyist. obviously, I was talking about Todd McCarthy.
You're getting the letters, huh?
It's out there.
You're hearing the clicks on your phone?
On the blogosphere and on the podosphere and the TikTok-osphere. Other ospheres. All the ospheres are a buzz and a Twitter, but not a Twitter, an X.
Probably doesn't want to help that I'm outside your house with those signs now.
It doesn't help. No, you have a really good social media presence, so congratulations on that. But no, I was talking about the Hollywood Reporter critic, Todd McCarthy. Mm-hmm. Todd McCarthy, not Senator McCarthy from way back in
Who's been dead for 70 years.
No, obviously. Come on, please. Now, full disclosure. Do I own a chair? Yes. Is the chair in my house? Yes. Do I believe that many of your activities, Corky, are very un-American? I've never hidden that fact. Go back and listen to our past episodes. And when I speak about those activities to the proper authorities, do we form a sort of committee? So technically, quote unquote, I'm chair of a House Un-American Activities Committee. But to say that alone makes me a McCarthyist, Corky. That's wow. You are painting with a broad brush, sir, and that is quite dangerous.
I fucking love your extended bit.
Have you no shame, Corky?
There's nothing better than when you go off on one.
Oh, we have fun. We have fun.
I always thought you were from Wisconsin.
It's so true. I'm devoted to rooting out communism in the podcast industry, whatever that is. I'm not sure.
You don't have to chop a trap house.
We'll get them. I gotta get them. All right, last movie to talk about, Corky.
Oh, yeah.
The movie that was nobody's favorite or least favorite anything.
Yeah.
It's our most middle movie, I guess. It is Trespass. This is also probably the biggest co-star that is in any of these movies. A lot of them, Cage very much outshines, you know, in terms of star power. We have Willem Dafoe in Dog Eat Dog.
Yeah, but he does a lot of different stuff, and he's never a lead.
He vacillates between, you know, leads in very small movies and smaller parts in bigger movies. But yeah, Frank Grillo, obviously, you and I are huge fans. But Penelope Cruz and Christian Bale, but again, they were at a very low point their start.
Same with James Franco, even though Brenda Blethyn was coming off those wins.
But he's playing off Nicole Kidman here, another former Oscar winner.
And Ben Mendelsohn,
future Oscar winner.
Right.
Put a wager down on that one right now. Any thoughts on Trespass? Anything to say about Trespass?
Well, I think that's the perfect summation. It is the most middling of all of these because it's Joel Schumacher. It's, I think we described it as... I've got a gun to your head. No, I've got a gun to your head.
Yes.
No,
yes.
I've got succinylcholine needle to your throat. No, I've secretly got $200,000 stashed behind you. That's all this movie is. And it just devolves as it goes along. But it's never great. It's not even close to great. And it's never horrible. It's a movie that would be running on, you know, HBO several times a day. Because you've seen this movie a million times.
You could jump in at any point, and you know, by the time your other show is back from commercial, you've seen three twists. You know, it's just everyone has the drop on everyone at all times, but none of it means anything. And there's a whole lot of the it's not an unreliable narrator; it's an unreliable rememberer.
Yeah.
Or it's just my memories got edited for the audience's sake. It's somebody will remember a part of something and they're but they didn't tell the whole story of what that actually means. But why wouldn't they? And their fucking memory, what?
Huh? Yeah, what? Right. Exactly.
Makes no sense. So
there's also a kind of a pussy assness to it because there's car accidents that would fucking shreds people in half, and it doesn't quite happen. Like, they don't want to up that. Maybe that's money, but it's a Joel Schumacher film. Probably would have had the money for that.
Yeah, right. Well, again, I think this is a case of both Kidman and Cage sucking the life out of the budget, like taking the car crash money away. But yeah, the daughter is certainly she is Ethan Hunt, man. She walks out of that like horrifying car crash like nothing happened.
Yeah, you know? Right.
It's like, oh boy, Trespass.
She has never snuck out of her house before this night, and that night she managed to sneak out and back 7 times.
So it is. I thought about for this one maybe going and answering the question of how many times does she leave and come back, but then I was like, why? What would be the point of that? That's pointless. Gorky, this is a movie that will not trespass on my memories because I already forgot it.
Yeah, it's very forgettable.
All right, that's all 7 films. Final question here, Corky. What did you learn either about Cage, about Cage movies, or maybe even about yourself?
Well, I think we started with the question we posed as unanswerable.
Mm.
Is Cage a good actor? Is Cage a bad actor? It's still unknowable to me because we distinctly chose poorly received Cage movies. There was not one of these on here that was high rated, maybe outside of, you know, Dog Eat Dog and Vampire's Kiss as kind of culty. No mainstream successes.
Divisive, I would say.
Yeah, okay, good
yeah, way to put cult it. Films, divisive for sure.
He doesn't turn up in any of them except for ones that are near 30 years old now, mm-hmm. Or 35 to 40 years old. And put his stamp on what he was doing. So I don't think that was still answered by this little endeavor. Maybe it will never be answered. It would not surprise me. And this is where I guess I land on it. It would not surprise me if, like, over the next 10 years, he turns in some of the best performances that where you're like, I didn't know he was capable of that. Even now, he's still surprising me, you know? It would not surprise me if he did one of those every year and then also a jujitsu every year. It would not surprise me if he starred in a documentary about himself as himself making a documentary about himself. That was the worst thing you ever saw. Like, it would not surprise me if he did that. There's nothing absolutely. This man
could
do. Well,
I mean, he's already made the movie where he's played himself, right? The unbearable weight of massive talent. See, plays Nicolas Cage, movie star.
In the time we've been doing this, he released 3 movies. One was a blockbuster, 2 that I never even heard of.
And he has like a one coming out this fall that has some Oscar buzz
right.
around it too. So weird, wild stuff. Yeah. Potential Cage essence for sure. You know, it does seem like over the last, you know, maybe since 2019, 2020, we've been leaning a little more towards like actual projects with some substance to them as opposed to just pure paycheck movies like Jiu-Jitsu and Left Behind.
It feels
so,
like
yeah,
he
I think he's
going
to still has the potential to surprise us. And maybe at this point, if he's, you know, kind of debt-free, feeling good, he's conquered the world, he's done it all. Maybe it's time to dig in, make a good movie or two, win another Oscar. Let's see what happens.
Maybe Nikki. He goes for his next directorial film, Sonny 2.
Oh, boy. Let's hope so. Sonny 2, colon, the next day. Wouldn't it be great if it was like, what day later?
And everybody's still playing themselves. Like, but they're acting like they didn't age a day.
Oh, that sounds so good. What did I learn about Nicolas Cage? I don't know what I learned. I mean, the fact is we watched 7 of the 100 and some films in his filmography. And like you said, he released like 3 or 4 more while we were doing this. So it's like, it's not something we're ever going to be able to totally catch up on. Maybe, I don't know, maybe we're due for a season 2 or a follow-up at some point.
Cage
to our
mush.
Season 2.
Cage mush.
More Cage for your buck. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe, I don't know if I've really learned anything about Nicolas Cage. I think I like him.
Yeah.
But I also think along with everybody else that he's capable, not just of like really bad performances, because I think sometimes people, you know, lump actually good performances in with some of those bad performances. But I think he's just capable of really kind of like lifeless, don't give a fuck kind of performances. And those are the ones that to me are really hard to sit through, where you just feel like he is not invested in this. He is going 1A all the way. Trespass is definitely a 1A
yeah.
type of movie, which we talked about. Everybody's 1A. Kidman's the 1A wife. He's the 1A husband, 1A daughter, 1A junkie, 1A robbers. And yeah. So he's certainly capable of greatness, terribleness, and especially mediocrity. But, you know, we're always going to hold out for the greatness. And I think I got a couple of great ones here. Vampire's Kiss. And I did love his performance in Dog Eat Dog as sort of the anti-Danny Ocean, Danny Pond, Danny Puddle, whatever he is. This wheeler and dealer who is just awful at wheeling
Danny
and
Salt and Sea. Or it'd be Danny Lake Erie, since they're in Cleveland.
Oh, right. So that's it. That's Cage. You know, I'll always carry him in my heart.
Sure.
Are there any movies we missed? My dad suggested Con Air the other day. My nephew suggested a movie called Willy's Wonderland, which is something that came out in 2021, which is like set at some sort of a Chuck E. Cheese type thing.
Oh, it's like a Five Nights at Freddy's.
Yeah. Our old friend Matthew Doherty, Rawhead Rex, I think, was Matthew Doherty, sent us Renfield. I'm sorry, we'd already recorded most of the episodes by the time anybody suggested any of these, so I do apologize. And our old pal Gunnar Peterson sent us Between Worlds, which is a 2018 from Cage's straight-to-VOD phase. So, I don't know, what else did we miss, and how did you like this first season? We'd love to hear from you. Get at us on the Schmeeds, Dare Daniel Pod, Facebook, Instagram. You know, hit me up in real life. I'm not hard to find.
Yeah, and what would you say? Yeah, just ask Senator McCarthy where he is. What would you say are your favorite Cage performances? Like, what if you think he's great or capable of greatness, what would be those performances? If you don't think he's great or you think he's capable of the worst performances, what would be those? I'd love to know about it.
Corky, that brings us to the end of the season, but the Dare Daniel journey is not over. Far from over. Very far from over. We will be back in 2024. We're shooting for January, but we're going to keep this same concept where we're just going to talk about one type of movie. This time, Corky, it's not going to be an actor. It's not going to be a director. It's not going to be a person. We're going to focus on a genre. Mm. Genre. That is a French word meaning type of thing. Don't look it up. Yeah, our next season is going to be all about torturing us with your most sinister dares for the worst possible romantic comedies. Oh, yeah. My God. Romantic comedies. They're called, Corky, rom-coms. That's a shortened version of that. The people like Schmeed, like we do with Schmeed, and how much time that saves. Rom-com. So I think if we say rom-com during this whole season, instead of romantic comedy,
you save
time. Boy, are we going to save a ton of time. These episodes are going to fly right by. But yeah, I think this is going to be fun because some of our favorite episodes that we've ever done have been some of the romantic comedies that we've reviewed. Corky, like what are some of your favorites that we've done?
Destination Wedding, I loved. Holidate, I love.
Oh, Holidate.
Dancing It's On.
Marvelous.
What's the other one? The Christian Mingle one. The Christian one, this real religious one. Where you
want old-fashioned?
Old-fashioned.
Yeah, that's, well,
maybe that's not a comedy.
That movie is quite funny. Well, sir, what was the name of the DJ character? That was hilarious. Love Actually, probably the most popular one we've ever done. We reviewed that with Gavin from Films on Trial way back in the pre-COVID era.
Yeah.
Love on a Leash. Yes. I mean, it's so much more than a romantic comedy, but it is an absolutely memorable film. How about The Wedding Planner? This is probably the most recent one that we did. Brown M&Ms, Corky, brown M&Ms, remember?
That was fucking fun.
You only eat the brown M&Ms because that's more chocolate. Brown means more chocolate. He's a fucking doctor who doesn't know what a candy shell is and has no idea how M&Ms work. That's delightful. But yeah, dancing, it's on. Some of the other ones we've done, Fever Pitch with Jimmy Fallon, The Beautician and the Beast
right.
with Fran Drescher.
The Princess Switch trilogy series.
Yeah, we only did two, but okay. Hey, maybe this is the third one.
I think we got to
check that final box from Justin to Kelly. Another one right in that dancing colon. It's on exclamation point vein. So I'm really excited about this. And the show came together this season kind of quickly, so we didn't have time to solicit dares, and we didn't really get any dares in there. We really want your dares. We
yes.
want your most sinister, most torturous, most horrifying rom-coms you can imagine. Send them to us. Or if there's one that you're like, everybody hates this, but I think it's actually pretty brilliant.
Exactly.
We'd love to see that too. Yeah, we want both.
I also want the rom-com that even the rom-com lovers, the people who are like, I just want this because I can put it on, veg out to it, look at my phone. I want the one that even you know you're guilty watching. Like even you know, you're like, ugh.
It's like, even for me, this is a bit much. Yeah, we're very excited about that. Like I said, it's going to be happening. We're hoping for January. It'll be early in 2024. So send us those dares now. Start pummeling us with those dares, and we'll start reviewing. I'm also going to go through all of the past dares that have been sent in, and I'm going to pull out anything that got... Sometimes things get stuck in the corner of these, like,
yeah.
these online inboxes just get stuck in there. So I'm going to root around in there and find if there's any stuck in the corner there. Just to tie this back to Nicolas Cage.
Sure.
Quirky, our man of the season, although, again... not the man for all seasons. That is Sir Thomas More still. Romantic comedies by Nick Cage. Very few and far between.
Yeah.
Very few. And I mean, when you think he's made 140 movies, especially where he's the lead, one of the romantic leads, only ones I could think of that I found were Honeymoon in Vegas with Sarah Jessica Parker. It Should Happen to You with Bridget Fonda. Moonstruck. Of course, which again, you know, it is a romantic comedy, although it's more than that. Maybe Valley Girl, I think that works too, but that's about it.
What about Peggy Sue Got Married?
Oh, yeah, okay.
There's a little fantastical element to it, maybe more drama than romance.
I'll buy it. Yeah, let's go with Peggy Sue Got Married too.
And I would consider, and this is one of my favorite movies of all time, Raising Arizona, a romantic comedy. Romance.
Right.
It's a crime caper. Romance. Definitely a comedy.
Romance. I think it would be just more of a mad slapstick comedy.
Sure.
But yeah.
But if you think of the biggest thing,
it's got comedy. It's got romance. Go for it.
Yeah, I would describe the movie as a comedy, and then I'd say the strongest relationship is him and Holly Hunter.
Well, absolutely.
God, what a great pair.
Great, great film. We will not be reviewing that next season on Cage Match. No, fuck. We will not be reviewing that next season on our new season of Dare Daniel, which we have not decided on a title yet.
No. Hey, maybe if you have an idea, send
title it in. TBD. But yeah, we'd love to hear titles too. It'll probably be something stupid like Cage Match. So, Corky, that wraps up Dare Daniel for at least the next few months or so, but mm-hmm. that does not mean that your boys, Dan and Corky, are going away anytime soon. Oh, we'll be back in 2 weeks. We'll be back in 2 weeks, just like usual. However, record scratch, we have a whole new concept, a whole brand new concept that we are calling Cannon Fodder, the Cannon Fodder podcast. Corky, I think we could describe this as sort of the bizarro Dare Daniel in
yeah.
a way. We're turning Dare Daniel on its head. Whereas in Dare Daniel, you send us your most sinister movie dares, you torture us with these horrible, horrible movies, and we review them in excruciating details. Instead, we're going to review some of the greatest, the most inspiring, the most accomplished, and certainly the most celebrated works of art in cinema history. We're going to go kind of randomly skip around through the most recent Sight and Sound critics poll of the top 250 films ever made.
This project is starting in 2 weeks. The first of these movies will be Akira Kurosawa's classic, Rashomon.
Yeah, great film from 1950. And of course, we're encouraging you to play along at home. So as we record this, If you want to watch it, you want to hear our review, Rashomon, it's currently available on Max and the Criterion Channel if you have those subscriptions. It's also free on Canopy, Plex, and available to rent on your usual VOD services. Widely available, only 88 minutes, and it's a great film if you've never seen it. If you haven't seen it in a long time, or if you've seen it every day for the last 500 years, we would love it if you played along with us. As we watch and review Rashomon and as we explore these highly celebrated works of art, I think it'll be fun. I think it's a different concept, not just in that we're watching really great films, but it's not going to be this run through the entire plot of the film. I think it'll be just more of a freewheeling discussion, and I think that'll make it more fun for people who kind of want to follow along at home, but hear some people have a hopefully interesting, intelligent, and substantive conversation about it with some laughs here and there.
What I listen to podcasts for is to affirm my beliefs, and that's probably what we're going to be doing for you. We're going to be talking about these movies and probably just repeating things you already feel, so you'll probably want to listen for that.
Yes, absolutely. Stroke your ego. Just tell us what to think. We'll tell you. Oh my God. So and so had an amazing opinion about this movie, and I concur 100%.
It's like now, they were listening to my thoughts.
What I think's interesting about this poll, as a list, I mean, there's lots of lists of the best movies ever made out there. So this is the Sight and Sound Critics Poll. Sight and Sound is a British film magazine. It's been doing this poll every 10 years since 1952. And
that's cool.
So the 2022 poll just came out last, I believe it was November. And who they're polling here is really like more in the scholar range. Like these are people who have really devoted their lives to studying film, teaching film, writing about film, reading about film, you know, really a much more scholarly kind of take on it. So it's not a, you know, popularity contest. This is not the biggest box office hits of all time. This is not the Academy Awards where an industry is rewarding itself. You know, there's no agenda here. This is very objective, and it's very much in a more scholarly realm. So yeah, there'll be some things like The Matrix or The Godfather will pop up here and there, but some other things are going to be very obscure even to us.
So as you can see, we have some big things coming up for you to listen to on Dare Daniel Podcasts in the coming months. But that's all we have for you now. We are done. We're saying sayonara to Cage Match, the Dare Daniel podcast season reviewing Nicolas Cage movies. But excited, we'll be back in 2 weeks with our inaugural episode of Cannon Fodder reviewing Rashomon.
Yeah, and again, if you want to listen along and play along at home, be part of the movie club Rashomon. It's only 88 minutes and it's pretty widely available out there. So until then, 2 weeks, Cannon Fodder. You can find it on the Dare Daniel website. You'll be able to find it on all the podcast apps and shit like that. Same as you would find, wherever you would find Dare Daniel, you're going to be able to find Cannon Fodder. So until then, 2 weeks, be sure to follow Dare Daniel Pod on Facebook and Instagram. We want those dares for romantic comedies. Send them. Like and rate us on your favorite podcast apps. Hit us up on the Schmeed. Go to daredaniel.com. We want those dares.
If you would like to support our podcast empire, because as Daniel stated, I am a godless commie pinko who just wants to take everybody's money to make my own empire grow.
Evil podcast empire. I should have stayed.
Probably should stay there. Just go ahead and visit daredaniel.com and find the donate button or click support the show or just say I support Corky's Un-American Activities. Any one of those things you want to do. It'll be all in the menu for you.
For Dare Daniel and for Cannon Fodder, remember, Cannon Fodder in 2 weeks. C-A-N-O-N, Fodder, F-O-D-D-R. So for Dare Daniel / Cannon Fodder, I'm Daniel Barnes.
And I'm Corky McDonald saying, see you, Nick Cage. It was nice getting to know you.
Bye-bye.